Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to the Sunday Before Christmas Be a Planner show with CPA Nathan Ross. And I am rushing to get on the air today. I just pulled into the driveway about 10 minutes ago, had to get set up here, and looks like I got all the right bells and whistles selected. If you're hearing the sound of my voice, I presume that's the case. In any event, as we normally do at the top of the show, well, first of all, thank you for tuning in, those of you that did. I know you've got other things to do on a Sunday morning before Christmas, or maybe not. Maybe this is the start of the day for you. It's early yet, but in any event, as you know, we typically start off the show by reminding you that you need to speak with your current advisors before you undertake any of the strategies or believe any of the things that we think you might consider tax-wise, real estate, private partnership-wise, et cetera, et cetera. Check with your lawyers, your accountants, your tax folks, your real estate investment advisors, et cetera, and let's make sure you heard what you thought you heard, and that in fact it might apply to you. And then for those of you that may not have advisors currently that you can consult on such matters, feel free to go to our website at beaplanner.com. That's BEAPLANNER.com, and you'll find a couple of things there that can connect you with us. The forms link at the top right of that page has four steps. It's four different forms. While I would love it if you'd fill all four out, if they apply, you may not have your own trade or business that you're responsible for filing the return for. But if you do, it's four steps will get us everything we eventually want to learn about you, about your facts and circumstances, so that we can communicate with you about your goals and objectives and find out if we might be able to help you meet your objectives. And I'll just tell you, if you'll just fill out the first form, the client profile, that'll go a long way towards letting us be able to undertake that conversation. Secondly, the other thing I wanted to mention is if you have the need, let me think here, to learn more about, we talked this past Friday about the 401 trust, and I just wanted to point out that if you don't understand what I'm referring to, it's quite simply, we're looking at how can we assist you with deploying funds that you currently have in an IRA and a 401k, and we identify the three possibilities. There's maybe four or five if you want to throw some hybrids in there, but let's just say you've got a choice of either rolling your money over to an IRA, you can roll your money to the self-directed 401 trust option that we prefer. That's also known in the IRA custodial world as a solo K. That's a marketing term, doesn't appear anywhere in the Internal Revenue Code, which is why we call it a 401 trust. And then lastly, you can rip the Band-Aid off and pull the money out and go ahead and pay your taxes. And I guess what I want you to be aware of is that we can actually pay less tax by not ripping the Band-Aid off, totally. We can do a Roth conversion once we get your money rolled over and invested in real estate private partnership syndications, and you'll pay less tax, a lot less tax, to do the Roth conversion. And not only now, it'll be for the rest of your life. Contrast that with ripping the Band-Aid off and paying your tax now to take your money out of the retirement vehicles you may have otherwise selected. And you'll pay a lot of tax, and you'll pay tax the rest of your life. And so when you hear assorted real estate gurus that also like to opine about the tax rules, and you hear them say, well, you know, you're going to make so much money in our program, the real estate investments that you'll find, you'll make all those tax dollars back. And I'll just tell you, that is, as Red Adair used to say, if you think the professionals are expensive, just try the amateurs. Well, that's a great example of amateur tax advice. And for the folks that don't understand what a Roth account provides you in this real estate private partnership arena, shame on you for telling people to pay tax, any amount of tax, to get their money free of the man, as I've heard it explained many times. You're never going to be free of the man unless you're in a Roth account, where then you won't pay tax for the rest of your life. If it's the 401k, the self-directed 401k version. Now, if you've got an IRA, unfortunately, even a Roth IRA, any kind of IRA account that invest in real estate private partnership syndications where there's debt, a mortgage involved, which is 100% of them generally. It's been very rare in the 20 plus years that I've been consulting in this arena that I've seen any of those that did not have a mortgage. We saw a few cash acquisitions back in the mid-80s. We've also seen some here as of late with the debt struggles that syndicators are having a hard time placing debt. But it's rare, and it's normally temporary. So you might temporarily acquire a property with no mortgage. You might use cash. But the aim, the goal, is to as quickly as possible convert that or refinance that on a cash out refi, so that you get your sum, part of your original capital back. But that's getting harder to do, and we'll talk a little bit about that here shortly. But let's do this. Let's go ahead and take a break a bit early. I've got a few connections I still need to get set right, so we'll circle back in a few moments with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word up to the wise. You better get to living.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at NPRoss.com. Nathan at NPRoss.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Big dreams and faded jeans.
Big dreams.
Big dreams.
Big dreams and faded jeans.
Okay, welcome back to this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And I did not get a chance to add more articles to the news page of the BeAPlannerShow.com. That's our companion site where we put some resources out there, videos, which I'm behind on as well, and news articles, which four or five I put up for the Friday show, but I did not get a chance to add more. But that won't stop me from talking about a couple of them that I pulled off. But anyway, I wanted to point out there's one article on that list. Let's see, it's called Why Maintaining Multifamily Occupancy Will Be Tough This Year. And of course, same time, I've got another article here, the most active apartment markets. If you read that article, they'll be talking about why they're not going to have a problem ultimately with the new product that's being delivered to the market. But bottom line is, yeah, there's a lot of averages being thrown around here, and just remember what we say about averages. And none of us are average; we're all actual. And so, there are half a dozen issues that are really challenging multifamily operators, and so I want you just to be aware, because we're going to talk about a project later in the show that is kind of, it's an intriguing opportunity just because it's the antithesis of what we would normally say when we talk about the age-old question. You know, it's the $50,000 question, or maybe the $100,000 question would be more like it, which is, well, what's best for building wealth with real estate? Is it single-family properties, single family rentals, or is it multifamily? It is apartments. And most of us, a lot of us started off with single family and then eventually transitioned into multifamily. I tell my clients the ones that are lucky are the ones that found out about multifamily early on and didn't transition at all, if you're really lucky. And if you took a little while like I did, then fine. But multifamily, for assorted reasons, I think is lower hanging fruit. Now, that said, the transaction that is not a real transaction yet. It's one that, in fact, I've got two going on right now that fit this same mode. It's a lot of single family properties, and it's not a sure thing yet. There's a lot of due diligence that remains, but I'll give you my take on which is better. And coincidentally, while I didn't have nearly as many units as represented with those transactions, I had a bunch, and I had enough to learn the lesson that I'll impart to you once we get into that. But in any event, the article that I was going to take a quick run through here is, let's see, why maintaining multifamily occupancy will be tough next year. And I'll tell you, this list a few of the issues. There's a couple others that they don't go into. But, of course, most people have heard about the interest rates having gone up, and that's a challenge in and of itself. But there's things connected to the interest rate, which would be something like a cap rate that is part of every acquisition and every disposition and every refinance. And a lot of people don't think banks are interested in cap rates. Well, guess what? They are, and it's even worse. The cap rate is only one of the ways they restrict a borrower in terms of what they might be willing to lend. And so if you're dealing with a lender that says, well, you know, we're going to use a 6% or 6.5% cap rate, which some of them are doing now, and that's up from 4% or 3.5% if you back up a few years ago, that's a big difference in the outcome as to how much money you might get on a refinance and or a sales transaction. And so when you were originally marketing your transaction as the syndicator, the lead partner, et cetera, you got some explaining to do when now you're knocking on a potential refinance or an exit, and all of a sudden you're realizing, well, whoa, wait a minute, the lender's not talking about giving us near enough money to take out the existing debt. We're going to have to come out of pocket with additional money. It's like bad news if you're the syndicator, and it may be bad news if you're the investor. And, of course, different transactions work differently, have different variables, different strengths, different weaknesses. Excuse me. And you might be in a scenario where all your partners are flush. Excuse me, I'm sorry. They can handle a cash flow, or the lead partner, you would hope, would have a strong balance sheet and can inject capital one way or another. Excuse me, get a drink of water there. But in any event, the problem is you may not have any of those options. And there's been transactions where they have not been able to refinance. And in case you're wondering, well, why would anybody raise their hand and say, hey, over here, I want to refinance as a lead partner. I want to refinance this transaction. Well, nobody volunteers in times like today where you're getting shot at from all sides. But, you know, if you did a debt structure when you made your acquisition 2 or 3 years back and you used the bridge loan option that was around with so many lenders, and in fact that's all you could get if it were a typical transaction, unless you had the good fortune of finding a seller that was either under duress, that was going to have to refinance and couldn't, or you found a seller that had what we call agency debt, a Fannie or a Freddie, FHA, et cetera, where they had, you know, maybe a 10-year term, and so they didn't have any stress of refinancing, so they're going to make that available if it can be assumed. In many cases, it can be, they'll make that available to the buyer. So that's great, but that's not what happened in a lot of cases here 2 and 3 years ago. Almost every deal we looked at for clients had a 3-year bridge debt option with 2 1-year extensions, and of course those aren't free. They typically cost you 1% of your loan balance, which is a lot of money, can be a lot of money. And so in any event, that's a problem in the current debt or the current multifamily market. Is, are you even going to have a property for, you know, next year? The other thing that's going on is your LTV, the loan to value on any type of loan that you can get, is hardly going to be over 50%. May not be. Maybe 50% seems to be quite the norm these days. So that will cause you some difficulties. And then if that's not enough, you've got insurance costs that have managed to wipe out a good chunk of cash flow because they've gone up threefold in many cases, still going up even now. And then, of course, you've got tax, property taxes that have skyrocketed as properties have become more valuable. And so you're literally whipsawed as a syndicator if you did not put in some additional capital or raise additional capital. Oh, and by the way, that loan that you're going to refinance with, you're going to be asked to put up, you know, enhanced or higher mortgage reserves. So, you know, the lender wants to make sure you're going to be able to pay them. So they force you to sock away a higher amount of reserve so that if you get in trouble, they can move to take that money and at least reduce or otherwise mitigate their losses. So, and if all that's not enough, so there's several reasons right there. Then you've got the large number of product that's being built, new apartment buildings and assorted markets. It's most of the markets. I'm not sure if it's this article, but one of the articles we talked about on Friday pointed out that, you know, most of the major markets had, you know, significant new supply growth coming in 24. And I guess last part, we've had some come into the market, quite a bit, in fact, here last half Q3 and 4 in 2023. But, you know, absorbing those new units is going to prove challenging to the existing owners. And so, you know, and then you add that with supply chain issues, rising, you know, costs due to inflation. You've literally got 7 or 8 fronts that you're juggling to try to figure out how you're going to survive. And, you know, it's going to be difficult. Most buyers or borrowers/buyers are reluctant to even go get a mortgage or go do an acquisition with the high rate loans. But in any event, let's do this. Let's go ahead and take a break. We'll circle back here momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Sacrifice. I was gonna be rich no matter how.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be A Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And I want to turn our attention. I may come back to another news article, but assuming we have time. But I wanted to mention, I teased at the top of the show with discussing a type of transaction that I haven't seen in a while, and now I've had two of them drop in my lap, but they involved the concept of is a real estate private partnership involving single family with significant numbers. I think one of these transactions is just over 400. Another one that I've got over on the, let's see, it's in Southeast U.S. I believe it's North Carolina. I don't see it here at the moment, but in any event, it's that one's over 500. So it's 500 single family, and I'm normally looking at apartment transactions, you know, where the buildings are all in one nice neat little package that might be anywhere from, I don't know, 300 to 700 units. Or one like the one I invested in about a year ago was spread out 10 different properties across the southeastern U.S. over to Bentonville, Arkansas. So that's quite a geographical diversified pool of properties. But bottom line is, most of us, if you've joined any of the mentor groups that promote multifamily, that they may not shun single family, but they talk about it as, you know, the natural progression of a real estate investor, which I have no idea what that means. There's nothing natural. There's nothing better or worse there. It's like Mac versus Windows. It's different. That's the only thing you can say. I know people that have, 20 or 30 single-family rentals, make as much or more money as the folks in the apartment space do, at least when you're talking about current cash flows. Now, the way that those properties appreciate is markedly different, and in most cases, you'd rather be on the multifamily side of that equation. But, you know, bottom line is there's no natural progression. If you got enough money, I would tell you the only thing natural about it is it usually takes less money, or it used to. Nowadays, it's with the low loan-to-value amounts you can get on a mortgage, even a single-family mortgage, you better be expecting to come out of pocket minimum $25,000 to $30,000 on a $150,000 single family, I would suggest. I think that's what I've seen lately with some clients. And you know, with a real estate private partnership syndication, you might invest anywhere from $30,000 up to, I don't know, I've got clients that have put nearly $1 million into one transactions. So you can determine within your own range of acceptability how much you're prepared to risk or invest. And I tell people, typically, I would do no more than $100,000. I'd rather have $100,000 in 10 different transactions than have, you know, 500 in two. Because why make it difficult to achieve success? And I would tell you, if you spread your money around in multifamily, out of every 10, you're going to hit two or three grand slams potentially, and you'll probably get another three or four or five singles, maybe a double in there, maybe a bunt, you know, maybe a strikeout. It happens. I mean, I hesitate to call it a strikeout because I haven't seen too many transactions where you end up with zero of your capital being returned, but it's happened. And in any event, the reason we like multifamily typically is because of the way the valuation occurs and the way we make money with multifamily. And with single family, by contrast, you buy a single family property, you know, fix it up, rehab it, et cetera. You put it into the rental market, you sign leases on it, and you operate the property. And you're getting some cash flow in most cases annually. You know, it's the difference between the rent you collect and the expenses and the mortgage that you have going out. But it's typically positive, or at least it is after tax, because remember, we're getting depreciable lives of 27 and a half years for the slowest depreciating assets. And in some cases, if you're doing any kind of rehab, you get some of that on a bonus depreciation election, where you're getting, I believe, 80% is the 2023 number of the tangible components, the you know, sidewalks, pools, a portion of the structure, you know, ceramic tile, appliances. You're getting to write that stuff off on day one, effectively. And if you do a cost segregation study, or have that done, you can't do it yourself. It needs to be an independent party. You can actually write off a portion of the components that get taken out of that big, call it $150,000 purchase amount that shows up on a HUD statement. And so it gets reallocated out of the 27 and a half year category over to the 5, 7, 10, 15, I believe, are the categories that it gets spread amongst. But again, you get to deduct it on day one as bonus depreciation. So it's quite a nice strategy with regard to single family rentals. But we also get that same set of rules in the multifamily market. And by the way, since the 2017 TCJA, the Trump tax bill, we've been able to do that with secondhand or used property for the first time. Heretofore, we had bonus depreciation, but it was limited to new transaction or new construction, and there were some other limits, but you know, this is a great set of rules for real estate investors, and if you play your cards right, you can literally pay little or no tax if one of you as a spouse is able to qualify as a real estate professional, and maybe the other spouse is the wage earner, and you can use the real estate losses to offset salaries and wages, at least this type. And that's presuming you qualify as a real estate professional, which is beyond the context of this discussion. But in any event, so back to the single family versus multifamily issue. So no matter how well you run those rental properties, those single family, when you go to sell, there's no valuation ascribed to that asset for cash flow. All that matters is what one of your neighbors sold their home for, even if it's not a rental home, a month ago or 3 weeks ago or 6 months ago, depending on the appraiser involved. And so that amount per square foot typically is what's going to be your cap in terms of the most you might expect to have that home valued. So there's a big difference between that and the way we value multifamily. Well, how do we value multifamily? Well, multifamily are valued based on a earning stream we call net operating income, which is you know, the direct revenues, direct cost of operating the apartment building, and that's divided by the cap rate we mentioned earlier, cap rate being the rate that a buyer or a bank is going to demand to see earned on their money. And so, you know, again, back up 2 years, 3 years, you were down in the 3.5% rate. Now you're up to 6.5%. And the more that rate goes up, the more the value of your property goes down. And so that's what's happened as of late. However, it still has significant opportunity when we buy a beat up old Class C apartment building, and then we spend money to renovate it, and at the same time, we're putting amenities in that make that property more competitive with other newer properties in the market. Maybe we've got a better location, or we've got some reason to typically attract tenants. And it's likely that our rates on an old Class C building that's been renovated will be less than a new Class A. And I don't think the amenities, even though you might update the amenities, I think, you know, there's still a big difference between a Class A and a renovated Class C. But bottom line is we're moving the rent up after we get the renovations done so that we've raised the top line on the net operating income calculation, which eventually works its way down to the bottom line and raises your net operating income. Therefore, the value of your property has gone up. It may have only been 6 months, but if you've achieved the renovation plan you had, you've achieved the marketing plan, so you've got new tenants paying higher rates, theoretically, you could refinance and or sell fairly quickly, and that is what happens. But you know, I said something there I want to spend just a minute on, that I was talking about Class A amenity sets and how they really are quite spectacular at times now. And I'll tell you, I was reading a second article this past week, and I think I saw another one even yesterday, talking about how that the typical new Class A buildings. I believe there was an article discussing some Miami projects. And there's just a whole group of people out there that would prefer to rent because they can rent an apartment unit for so much less than buying a home with the equivalent set of amenities. I mean, it's pretty impressive, some of the stuff you can get for $2,000, $2,500 a month maybe in the Houston market. And even in Miami, I didn't go look at listings, but I just, you know, the article said, you know, it's kind of a start point in these newer buildings is in the $2,500 range for a studio and maybe $3,200 for a one bedroom. Well, you know, if you're talking about a home that would be $800,000, $900,000, well, you're not going to be able to pay a mortgage for $2,500 to $3,000 a month. And I understand those are two different properties. What I'm saying is, however, some people have decided that renting is a better lifestyle choice. And I've consulted with clients for years where, you know, typically one spouse will say, well, shouldn't we buy a bigger home? Don't we need, you know, the tax write-offs that come with it? And my response, of course, living in Houston, Texas, was always probably not for that reason. You know, you don't do it for tax reasons. I don't suggest. I think buying a bigger home is purely a lifestyle choice. Well, that can be true on renting a smaller home, right? And if you can get a what's conceivably a better lifestyle out of renting than buying, why wouldn't you do that? And I know that's hard for, you know, Madison Avenue to swallow. I mean, they've been promoting home ownership forever without really proving it. And I would tell you that I, since 1985, when I started my CPA practice, I've been telling people, hey, let's take a look at that. And bottom line is, I mean, there have been exceptions, not many, not in the Houston area, where I think I've had one client in what's, it's hard to believe I'm saying this, 40 plus years now, where they actually paid tax on the sale of their principal residence because they've gotten up over the $500,000 gain threshold. That's crazy. I mean, compared to clients in California and maybe a couple in Arizona, I mean, California, it happens more routinely than not. But in any event, excuse me once again, but I think that let's see here. I tell you what, let's take one more quick break. And then when I come back, I want to go through some of the math here on this multifamily versus single family conundrum that we're discussing. We'll be right back with more of the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at NPRoss.com. Nathan at NPRoss.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control and make it.
Okay, welcome back to the last few minutes of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. So, single family versus multifamily, and I mentioned I've had two recent transactions, potential transactions, come through where there's some big portfolios of single family homes available, and I'm just going to tell you the metrics. When you're buying 400 plus or 500 plus single family, you get special pricing, and especially if you can find it from people that want out of that arena, which I can certainly understand. And again, I think we had somewhere between 80 and 100 single family homes at one time, you know, it was a challenge. And I'll just tell you, those, you know, when you've got most of all of ours, first of all, we didn't get them all at one time. We picked up, you know, 10 or 15 at a time, and then they kind of mounted up. But when you're doing rehab on even more than a few homes, you got to be juggling. And these portfolios, both of these have significant rehab. In the one case, I believe it's somewhere over the $10 million mark on 400 homes. And on the other one, it's even more. It's like maybe 30, 35 million over that 600 plus pool, or 500 plus, I'm sorry. And so when you figure you've got to manage those, I mean, rehabs are managed individually. I don't care how good you think your team is, somebody better be responsible, because you got a little thing clicking along out to the side that I can promise you your contractors aren't focused on, and you will be if you're the one that's promised passive investors returns. And it's called holding cost. And when you think about the time to you getting those properties to market with a tenant in them, you know, where they're paying rent every month, you know, you've got mortgages that are due between the time you acquire it and the time you start your rehabs. You've got, you know, geographically dispersed, even if it's across one city, unless you're buying an entire subdivision, you've got time to manage this stuff, you know, and it's for a team. It's not for one person. And again, you have no idea just how suffocating holding costs can be. But if you're even a month late on 500 houses that are generating or should be generating, I don't know, $1,200 a month or more in rent, that's a total of $600,000 every month that goes by, you're getting slammed. And it's not just that you're not getting that money. You've got money going out the other door. And so I just tell you, you know, this, and it's not like you don't have holding costs on a multifamily property. I get it. But you're not going to be managing just because you got a 300 or 400 unit apartment building doesn't mean you've got 300 or 400 individual rehab jobs happening all at the same time before you can rent any of them. You know, you can start renting the renovated units as they are available, and you can put tenants in them. So it's a little bit different of a management issue. Still takes some savvy managers, but I'm just telling you, man, the holding costs on this volume of single family can be suffocating. Now, here's an opportunity, though, and you see this the more you look at the potential numbers, or at least, well, yeah, both of them I can say this about. It's like I mentioned, you get some special pricing when you're buying this volume of homes, and therein lies an opportunity, as I see it. I was discussing this with one of my clients, and I pointed out all the negatives, but he didn't get deterred. He said, well, you know, I would tell you that maybe the smart play here is not to take them and try to renovate them and then rent them. How about you take them and you sell off individual homes on a one-off or a four-off to investors to where you're capturing even part of that upside. And I like that idea because anywhere there's difficulty, typically, there's opportunity. And it's a matter of someone looking at this and seeing a different angle than you or I might. And it's interesting how almost every piece of real estate, you can put an option or an opportunity in front of five different real estate investors, and they'll see five best ways to execute or operate those assets. And so I would tell you that is absolutely something. When you look at the potential profit on these deals, let's see, it's almost double, not quite, but almost double in both cases. So if you're putting up, you know, $30 million total between the debt and the equity raise, you're looking at another 30 in potential, and I underscore potential, profit. I always question when I see these big discounts on the front end. I think, well, wait a minute, why wouldn't an owner, even if they're old and feeble like I am, why wouldn't they bother to sell these units off and you know, onesies or twosies, because they've still got a lot of landing, a lot of runway to land on, and interest some single family investors. But anyway, well, I think we're close enough here to the end of the show where I'm going to thank you for listening in. I hope you have a great holiday. We'll be back on Friday at 11 a.m. right here on AM 700 KSEV, and we hope you can join us then. Thanks for tuning in today.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.